Donald Trump reverses the due process. Trey Gowdy decides he's going to investigate Ben Carson. And the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has decided legislation and executive governance for the entire nation. Up next on the Adrian Slade Show.
The presidential motorcade has just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
Welcome to the program. I'm Adrian Slade. We've got a lot to get into, but one of the things that I want to touch on is a disturbing trend that's happening. And it's been going on since Donald Trump was elected. You know, the resistance, those people on the left, they go on and on about how the Electoral College screwed them. How it wasn't equal and equitable, that, you know, the fact that it allows somebody in Nebraska to have the same weighted vote as somebody in Manhattan, that to them doesn't mean anything. They love the popular vote. You know, it's an American Idol contest that leads to communism. You know, let's just have mob rule democracy without the representative republicanism and just allow everybody to, you know, who's going to put in the most votes. Maybe we can text 100 votes and, you know, see who wins. I don't know. That's basically the left's way of doing things. Whereas the Electoral College basically ensures that everybody has an equal weighted vote across the nation. But I mean, they don't even need to worry about the fact that they won California to beat, you know, Donald Trump in a popularity contest, because the 9th district is deciding policy. The court system, activist judges, they are deciding what the Trump administration's agenda is going to be. And the Supreme Court has actually stepped in. On Monday, the Supreme Court said it's not going to hear Trump administration's appeal of a federal judge ruling regarding DACA. The Supreme Court rejected an appeal from the Trump administration to decide the legality of the president's plans to end the Obama-era DACA program affecting young illegal immigrants next month. In recent months, lower court judges have moved to stop the administration from ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which protects about 800,000 young immigrants brought to the country illegally as children from deportation. And of course, we've already debunked in a previous show how many of them were not born here. Many of them were actually brought at an age where they couldn't decide where to go, but some of them weren't even with their parents. They decided to run across the border in a big group at a young age. You know, kids showing up with no parents, with, like, you know, a toy blanket. I mean, it was obvious that they were sending those people here for a reason, from Central America. And we went through all that. Go back and listen to the DACA CACA program that we did. But the court system decided to step in and tell the executive branch they can't knock down something that should just end on its own. That's basically what we're looking at. Donald Trump isn't looking to destroy DACA. He's just letting it expire. And the court system has decided to overstep its branch and basically, you know, step right on in to the executive branch and tell them what to do. It's bogarted its way on in, and it's basically commanding what's going to happen. Going back to the article, in an unsigned comment released Monday, the Supreme Court denied the unusual request to take up the issue, saying the appeal should move through the normal appellate process. The move kicks the case back to the 9th Circuit in San Francisco. Oh, yeah. The 9th Circuit. The DACA program, which provides work permits and a myriad of government benefits to illegal immigrants, is clearly unlawful, White House Principal Deputy Press Secretary Raj Shah said. The district judge's decision to unilaterally reimpose a program that Congress had explicitly and repeatedly rejected is a usurpation of legislative authority. The fact that this occurs at a time when elected representatives in Congress are actively debating this policy only underscores that the district judge has unwisely intervened in the legislative process. And, you know, that's the truth. I mean, they have stepped all in it. And when it concerns the Dreamers, we have to think about some of the recent news articles about these Dreamers. They're not these wide-eyed, you know, they just have hope. They just want to be Americans. They just want to find a home. All they want, you know, you may say I'm a dreamer. They just want to find home sweet home right here in America. Like Abigail Hernandez. She's 21 years old. She's a dreamer. She was arrested for threatening to shoot students at an East High School in Rochester. Police announced on a press conference that Hernandez, an illegal immigrant shielded from deportation by the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, made a threat on East High's Facebook page back on February 16th, 2 days after the horrific mass shooting at Parkland, Florida. Though East staff members reported the threat that day, police didn't arrest Hernandez until February 20th, as the threat was made through a fake Facebook account that Ms. Hernandez made in January. The threat from the fake account read, "I'm coming tomorrow morning, and I'm going to shoot all y'all biatches." Upon searching Hernandez's home, Rochester police discovered a shotgun. Hernandez was charged with making terroristic threats. When asked by ABC, Rochester City School District officials could not answer why Hernandez was enrolled as a student when she is 21 years old. How does that even happen? We have a dreamer threatening a mass shooting days after the most ridiculous mass shooting that we just had in Florida. She has a weapon, and she's a 21-year-old student. How is this just getting by the cracks? We have a situation here in our area where a 13-year-old made a stupid joke about a school shooting happening on February 31st because, you know, February 24th or 28th is the last day of the month. And police arrested this 13-year-old and detained him over the weekend. And he could be facing up to 10 years. Felony, terroristic, you know, charges. So, I mean, obviously, some people are taking threats seriously. But why are others getting around? Why was the Parkland shooter able to surpass or you know, go right around the threats that he put out there? I mean, he put numerous threats out there. He called the authorities directly and said, "Hey, I need help. I'm losing it, guys." I mean, 40-some attempts by the cops. The FBI dropped the ball numerous times as well. So, I mean, I can't figure out why some are getting the pass, the others aren't. But going back to the Daily Caller article, sadly, in the wake of the recent Parkland, Florida tragedy, schools across the country have been grappling with social media threats intended to instill fear and anxiety. While we cannot comment on this particular police investigation around a threat made to East High School, I want to stress how fortunate we are to be a part of a community in which the police department works closely with schools to ensure the safety of the entire school community. And that was the East High School Superintendent Sean Nelms. That was a statement by him. But see, you know, we need the Supreme Court and the Ninth District to both step in and tell us, hey, you got to keep that executive memo that Obama passed. That, I mean, it's not even legislation. It was never voted on by Congress. But yeah, let's just keep the Ninth District just jumping in the middle of everything. Because they did it again. In fact, Daniel Horowitz talked about this in Conservative Review over the fact that the judge in the Ninth District decided that he is going to demand that Trump keep Obama's methane rule intact. This from his article. While the country engages in political civil war over Trump, the courts have granted Obama a third term, making most policy changes moot. The latest example is a radical California judge forcing Trump to continue Obama's costly regulation limiting the output of methane emissions from oil and gas operations on federal lands. If Congress fails to rein in the judiciary, there is literally no purpose for holding the midterm elections. After all, the judiciary has already largely gutted the 2016 presidential election. Not only are the courts rewriting the Constitution, national sovereignty, and even statute on the books, they are forcing Trump to continue all of Obama's executive actions, whether illegal or discretionary. They are forcing him to continue Obama's illegal amnesty, his transgender social engineering in the military, and his contraception mandate on private employers, his healthcare funding for family planning groups, and many of his costly regulations, some of which are against statute to begin with. As part of Obama's executive legislation to promote his climate change action plan, he ordered the Bureau of Land Management in 2016 to reduce the venting and flaring of methane from oil and gas production. The growth of oil and gas production is America's very own Hanukkah miracle, creating jobs and prosperity through the country. So naturally, Obama did everything possible to crush its growing momentum. Methane is the primary component of natural gas, and this regulation is wreaking havoc on one of America's fastest job-producing industries. Last year, Trump included the methane rule among other number of Obama energy rules that he delayed pending further analysis of the cost and purpose. So, I mean, let's put this aside. The policy merits Obama's rule for the purpose of this article. This is a question of law. The EPA and the states already regulate methane and output of oil and gas. The Bureau of Land Management simply had no statutory authority to promulgate a new regulation. Even the extremely loose rewriting of the Clean Air Act, misconstrued to grant the EPA authority to fight the weather, simply cannot be applied to the Bureau of Land Management under any interpretation. There is no law on the books that comes close to vesting such power in this particular agency. But yeah, the Ninth Circuit's going to step in again, and they're going to cause us to have to submit to their will. They're going to cause California's interest through a judicial activist called a judge. He is going to usurp the legislative and executive branches and force the executive branch to submit to the will of the courts. And this is what happens when you give power to the other side and give them 8 years just based on, you know, we just want to vote for the first black president. Never mind the fact that there was warning signs that this guy's like, you know, very communist in nature. I mean, birds of a feather, Jeremiah Wright, Frank Marshall Davis down the line. And we're going to just look past all of that and allow him to stack the court with activist judges. So when the time comes, hey, screw your legislative branch, screw your executive branch. His policies withstand because of the fact that he has Supreme Court and district judges that will carry his water after he's long gone. Back in a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So we've been talking about how the courts, most importantly, the Ninth District in California, how they have been basically making policy, how they've been running the show. No need to worry about the Electoral College versus the popular vote argument of the left. You know, they're complaining about, oh, well, you know, Hillary Clinton lost, but she won the popular vote, so she should have won. Well, doesn't matter when you have an activist district court shutting everything down. But here's an interesting turn of events that involves illegal immigrants. From The Hill, Supreme Court rules immigrants can be detained indefinitely. Immigrants can be held by U.S. immigration officials indefinitely without receiving bond hearings, even if they have permanent legal status or are seeking asylum. In a 5-3 ruling, Justice Elena Kagan recusing, the court ruled that immigrants do not have the right to periodic bond hearings. The ruling is a defeat for immigration advocates who argued that immigrants should not be held for more than 6 months at a time without such a hearing. The Supreme Court ruling allowed Trump and the Trump administration the appeal of a ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals last year that imposed a rule requiring immigrants held in custody be given a bond hearing every 6 months, as long as they aren't considered a flight risk or a danger to national security. Quote, to impose a rigid 6-month rule like the Court of Appeals did is really a mistake, Acting Solicitor General Ian Gershrung said in November. In its ruling, the court affirmed the right of the government to detain immigrants while it determines whether they should be allowed in the country. Immigration officials are authorized to detain certain aliens in the course of immigration proceedings while they determine whether those aliens may be lawfully present in the country, Justice Sam Alito wrote in the majority opinion. The lead plaintiff in the class action lawsuit, Alejandro Rodriguez, is an immigrant with a permanent legal status who was convicted of possession of a controlled substance and joyriding. He was detained by immigration officials for 3 years without a bond hearing. The ACLU took up his case and eventually winning his release and cancellation of his deportation order. The government's appeal was begun under the Obama administration and continued after President Trump took office last year. But see, that's the thing. If you're an illegal immigrant, you shouldn't be afforded the rights of due process, the rights of the Constitution. You know, just because you're here in America doesn't make you, doesn't protect you with the rights that we receive under the Constitution. I mean, that's one of the things that's the argument for Guantanamo Bay, you know, and Gitmo. One of the things there is these people are enemy combatants. If they're enemy combatants or they're non-citizens, well, they shouldn't enjoy the protections of the Constitution. I mean, if they're here illegally, send them back. If they're here as war criminals because they're battling the United States, well, treat them as war criminals. Because what happens when we just allow non-citizens to roam about? Well, we get a story like what happened in Pennsylvania from the Washington Times. Lawsuit. 100,000 non-citizens registered to vote in Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's probably... Do you remember back when Mitt Romney was running back in 2012 and there were districts in Pennsylvania where there was absolutely zero ballots cast for Mitt Romney? How is that even possible? There wasn't one person who was duped by Romney and said, yeah, he didn't have a binder full of women and, you know, a dog on the top of his car. I'll throw a vote for the guy. There wasn't any of that. So the Washington Times reported more than 100,000 non-citizens are registered to vote in Pennsylvania alone, according to the testimony submitted Monday in a lawsuit demanding the state come clean about its extent of its problems. The Public Interest Legal Foundation, which has identified similar non-citizen voting problems in studies in Virginia and New Jersey, said Pennsylvania officials have been admitted to allowing non-citizens to be registered and vote for decades. But the state officials have stonewalled the Public Interest Legal Foundation and its request for access to the data that could expose the problem. For months, Pennsylvania bureaucrats have concealed facts about non-citizens registering and voting. And that ends today. The PILF president, not to be confused with MILF, it is PILF. That's for the Public Interest Legal Foundation. It's probably not the best acronym you want. But that ends today, President and General Counsel of PILF, Christian Adams, said. He said Pennsylvania had already admitted to a glitch dating back to the 1990s that had allowed non-citizens applying to renew driver's license to be offered the chance to register to vote. Mr. Adams said he now wants to find out how bad the problem is overall. Pennsylvania officials wouldn't respond to the lawsuit, nor to the 100,000 non-citizen number. We're not going to commit to anything, and we're not going to comment on anything regarding the litigation. Wanda Murren, the director of communications and press at the Pennsylvania Department of State, was quoted as saying, the 100,000 number cited in the lawsuit comes from testimony given by Pennsylvania Commissioner Al Schmidt, who revealed the glitch in the state motor vehicle bureau systems prompted non-citizens the ability to register to vote. And Mr. Schmidt didn't respond to an email seeking comment. While Pennsylvania refused PILF, not MILF, record request, the group did manage to obtain data from some counties and found several curious cases. One man, Felipe Rojas Orota, you like that? Canceled his registration last year, filing a handwritten note saying he was not a citizen. He had, however, registered as a Democrat and voted in three separate elections, including most recently the 2016 election, the year of the presidential race. A woman had registered had her registration canceled in 2006 as a non-citizen and yet re-registered to vote twice and cast ballots in some elections. That woman, a registered Democrat as well, and is still active in the system, the lawsuit says. Yet another woman voted in 2008 and 2012, had her registration canceled in 2014 because she wasn't a citizen, then re-registered and voted in 2016 according to documents filed in court. She was registered as a Democrat, too. Wow, there's a pattern going on here. The federal motor voter law requires states to make voter registration available at motor vehicle bureaus and also pushes states to try to keep their voter rolls clean. Yeah, good luck on that. Have you been to Pennsylvania? Not the cleanest state. Not really the cleanest state in the union, especially Philadelphia. I'd like to say it's like the armpit of America. I'm sorry if you're from Philly, but it's kind of a dump up there. The federal motor voter law requires states, you know, keep their records clean. And if Pennsylvania officials repeatedly refuse requests under law, according to the lawsuit, the state would only let PILF look at records related to voters stripped from the rolls because of death or change of residence. How convenient. PILF says that's a misreading of the law. The group has released reports in the past detailing more than 1,000 non-citizens registered to vote in New Jersey and more than 5,500 here in my state of Virginia. Roughly a third of those from Virginia actually cast ballots. The numbers only include people whose registration was canceled because they later said they weren't citizens and thus ineligible to vote. Analysts say it's difficult to figure out how many others are registered but never discovered because they don't self-report. Of course they're not going to self-report. But this is something we need to crack down on. Illegal immigration, you know, we've talked about it quite a bit. We've talked about DACA and how DACA is being misrepresented. We've talked about the need for cracking down on sanctuary cities and removing people, but it's pretty bad when these people are allowed to come in the country, they're allowed to make threats to high schools about shooting them up, they're allowed to be covered by the Ninth Circuit, who is basically dictating law for the entire country in California, and now they're allowed to vote in Pennsylvania and basically swing a state. Back in a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
Adrian Slade.
Welcome back. I think we are in governmental bizarro world. I mean, we've got the Ninth Circuit out in California that I've been talking about, basically deciding executive powers, what the executive branch can do, things that weren't even put through the legislative branch. So basically, the Ninth Circuit is deciding policy for the entire country. But then our president, looking at gun control and talking about gun control, says this about the Second Amendment, about due process. Just listen to this.
An individual is reported to be a potential danger to themselves or others. Allow due process, the ability to go to court, obtain an order, and then collect not only the firearms, but any weapons in the possession
of
that
individual. Or might take the firearms first and then go to court, because that's another system. Because a lot of times, by the time you go to court, it takes so long to go to court to get the due process procedures. I like taking the guns early, like in this crazy man's case that just took place in Florida. He had a lot of firearms. They saw everything. To go to court would have taken a long time. So you could do exactly what you're saying, but take the guns first, go through due process second.
How does one think that this is how due process works? I mean, this is my problem with President Donald Trump. He's an empty suit. He's got the things that he really wants to do, his pet projects. Of course, that's always trade. It's always about trade. In fact, he's going to set U.S. tariffs for 25% for steel, 10% for aluminum. I don't know what that's going to do to the steel and aluminum industry, but trade deals were his number one thing. The wall, still waiting on that. I mean, DACA looks like he's going to cave in on that. Yeah, he's pushing it through the correct way, doing it through Congress. But, I mean, come on. It sounds to me like Congress is going to give us something we don't want. And now he's talking about due process being, yeah, we're just going to take your guns. And, you know, we'll figure it out later. And then if you're innocent, then we'll go ahead and give them back. Because that's what always happens. I mean, this is like a DUI checkpoint. We're going to pull you over, even though you didn't do anything wrong. We are going to check your ID, you know, finger quotes there. Check your ID. Make sure there's nothing we can, you know, finagle or engineer. You know, any other administration down the road is going to have that opportunity now. Say we get another Barack Obama in, and he decides, you know, I think I want to go ahead and I want to look into this guy over here. Let's go ahead and take his guns away. And then we will go through the due process. That's not how it works. Innocent until proven guilty. I mean, you have to at least go through the due process rights or go through due process before you lose your rights. But, you know, I guess that's MAGA. I guess this is the Bull Moose Party and no longer the GOP. It surely ain't conservatism. That's been dead and gone. I mean, they took conservatism out into the backyard and shot it in the throat. But this is why I wanted a President Ted Cruz, because I knew if a constitutional crisis comes upon us at some point, which we knew was going to happen, considering 8 years of constitutional neglect, I want somebody whose first reaction is to view it through the lens of constitutionality, because it's fresh in his brain. It's his go-to place. Not somebody that's just going to cut a deal for the sake of deals and ignore the ramifications of those deals on the Constitution. But we've got more unnerving clips of Trump wanting to work with the other side. You remember those meetings he had with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi? Well, now he's encouraging Dianne Feinstein to chip in some of her ideas on gun reform.
Just doing something on this background check issue and using that as a base, and then I would like to add some of these other things we've talked about, I think would make a major difference.
So if you could add that to this bill, that would be great, Dianne. If you could add what you have also, and I think you can, into the bill.
Yeah. So Joe, are you ready?
Can you do that? Joe, can you do that? Pat, can you add some of the things you're not going to agree with?
Yeah, if you help.
Well, no, I'll help, but can you add what Amy and what Dianne have? Can we add them?
I mean, is that 4D Chinese checkers? I mean, what is this? You have the majority in all three branches of government. Why do you need Dianne Feinstein's input? Why do you need to include her? What, we're going to show bipartisanship. It's art of the deal. I don't buy any of that. You don't need art of the deal when you have the majority. But, you know, this is what happens. We've got chaos throughout the country. The Ninth Circuit running the country, basically, deciding, we're just going to do travel bans. We're going to knock down. We're going to allow DACA. You know, we're going to do all of that. And while that's going on, Trump is here reversing the way due process is handled. He's going to allow Dianne Feinstein to throw her crap into the gun control bill. And then Jeff Sessions, they attack him. From CNN, President Donald Trump rebukes Attorney General Jeff Sessions and referred to him behind the scenes as Mr. Magoo. Trump on Wednesday lashed out again at Sessions on Twitter for his oversight of the Justice Department. The tweet prompted a rare response from Sessions, who in a statement defended his leadership of the department and its work. Trump made his disagreement with Sessions known clearly in the past, pointedly referring to Attorney General as, beleaguered, and saying that he shouldn't have chosen Jeff Sessions to lead the Justice Department had he known that the former senator would have recused himself from the oversight of the Russian investigation. Sessions has stood by his decision and continued to offer no public signal that he intends to step down in the face of criticism, despite an apparent offer to resign after Trump berated him and called him an idiot last year. Two law enforcement officials told CNN that staff aides gave Sessions a bulletproof vest as a gag gift to mark the anniversary of his first year in office earlier this month. The Washington Post cited people whom Trump has spoken to said that the president has complained about Sessions not defending him and not being loyal enough, comparing Sessions unfavorably with lawyers who would have worked with him personally and called Sessions Mr. Magoo, who was the 20th century cartoon about an old man who bumbles into comic situations because of his poor eyesight. So yeah, again, he attacks Jeff Sessions. And one has to wonder, what is going on with the White House? It's insane. From what I'm hearing, he was fuming yesterday after Trump attacked him. And he pushed back in a rare statement. But, you know, then he's dining with Rod Rosenstein. So, I mean, what do we do? I mean, you've got General Kelly, who he actually said, John Kelly said that leaving the Department of Homeland Security to go work for the White House as president's chief of staff, that God punished him. Unbelievable. So, you know, at least somebody like Lee Zeldin, he's actually put in a letter to Jeff Sessions to appoint a special counsel to investigate activities regarding the FISA abuse and how and why the Clinton probe ended and why the Trump-Russia probe began, which is a step in the right direction, because everybody knows that what the Democrats are accusing the Trump administration of doing, they're actively doing it. The collusion with the Russians was huge with the Clintons and with Obama and with, you know, how they're engineering or reverse engineering, as Dan Bongino says, this crime. But we're not investigating it, really. Are we Jeff Sessions? Are we Trey Gowdy? Where's he at? Where was he on Benghazi? Everybody loves Trey Gowdy because he kind of does like Chris Christie. He gets up on TV and, I'm going to scold you like the little school kid you are. But then he does nothing. Benghazi, how is that not a shoe-in? Based on the information everybody knows, that's public knowledge. Based on movies that were made. Why was nothing, you know, even, it wasn't even followed up on by Trey Gowdy? But, you know, Gowdy, he's decided, I'm not going to run for re-election. I'm going to bow out. But on my way out, I'm going to open an investigation into Ben Carson and the Housing and Urban Development Secretary Department. I don't understand. I mean, yeah, I'd have to say that $31,000for an office furniture set, it's probably, yeah. But I thought Ben Carson was kind of loony halfway through, too. I mean, his whole campaign was, it can be exemplified by purchasing a $31,000 office set. I mean, chairs of $5,000, but I mean, this is what comes from the right scoop. House Oversight Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy on Wednesday sent a request to the Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson for information related to his purchase of a $31,000 set for his office. Trey Gowdy's request, which featured three categories of documents related to Carson's expensive taxpayer-funded redesign, was issued to, quote, help the Oversight Committee determine whether HUD adhered to the applicable spending limitations while redecorating the office. In addition to the revelation of the dining set and the office furniture, which was purchased last December while HUD cut their homeless assistant budget, The Guardian reported that Carson intended to spend an additional $165,000 on a lounge set for his office. So, I don't know what's going on there. At this point, the GOP's in charge. Donald Trump administration is running the GOP, and it's just in utter chaos. At this point, we need a new party, and it looks like the Federalist Party is starting to focus in even better directions. And we need a convention of states fast. Back in a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So retailers are taking upon themselves to proactively move ahead of whatever legislation may come down the road as far as gun control is concerned. You know, they've now decided 21 should be the age that you can buy a rifle. So they're going to take it upon themselves to restrict the sale of those items to people that are only 21 or older, which is fine. I'm a capitalist. I do think it's kind of odd that the left is pushing for this lowering of the voting age to 16. You know, I've said it before. So you can't buy a gun until you're old enough to buy a bottle of Jack Daniels, but we'll let you vote even though you're just now getting your learner's permit. It's ridiculous. It's just, I mean, the military argument always comes into play, but then they're going to make special exceptions for the military. You know, we're going to allow the 19-year-old to carry a rifle because he's enlisted, but the rest of us, nah, your Second Amendment rights are infringed until you're 21, old enough to buy some Kahlua. But see, if you want to take your business down that road, go right ahead. I don't have a problem with that. Walmart, you want to do that? It's your prerogative. Dick's Sporting Good, they have decided they're just going to remove assault rifles, you know, the AR-15, the scary assault rifles, and just not sell them at all. Again, that is your prerogative. I don't care. I'll shop elsewhere. The market will determine how this goes down. While Walmart is upping the age to 21, while Dick's is basically removing the ability to buy those items from their store, I'm sure there's going to be an online company that is going to advertise to the 18 to 21-year-old market. I'm sure there's going to be an organization that is going to specialize in just the sale of AR-15s. That's how the free market works. Until legislation steps in and just prohibits it all the way across the board, then that's going to happen. None of it's going to make any difference in the scope of everything that's going on with gun control, because people that get the guns get them illegally. People that use the guns in mass shootings have always gone through background checks, but yet they've never been stopped. I mean, what we really need to look at is law enforcement. And we don't need to do like Trump said and take the guns away first and then figure out whether you're bad. But if Dix wants to go ahead and take it upon themselves to remove those items and not sell them, fine. I'm fine with that. I'll shop elsewhere. I'll go to Cabela's, or I'll go to, you know, somewhere else. But when the CEO says this in an interview, I have a little bit of a problem.
We were so disturbed and saddened by what happened in Parkland that we said we need to do something. And we talked about what we needed to do, and we felt that we needed to make a statement that we will no longer sell assault-type rifles, high-capacity magazines, and a few other things. And our hearts went out to those kids and to their parents. And you know, everybody talks about thoughts and prayers going out to them, and that's great. But that doesn't really do anything. And we felt that we needed to take a stand and do this.
So there it is. The continual attack on thoughts and prayers. And let's just gloss over the fact that Mr. I Can't Stand Thoughts and Prayers, CEO of Dick's, is basically virtue signaling. And why is that the case? Because what he is proposing to do in the wake of what happened at Parkland, he did 6 years ago. So this guy is grandstanding, and he's finding a way to, look at me, I'm making a difference. I'm going to go ahead and pull those guns, those scary AR-15s off the shelf so you can't buy them from Dick's, when he did that 6 years ago. So then he's going to go back to, well, you know, not only am I making a difference, but thoughts and prayers, they don't mean anything. That's not enough. You know, thoughts and prayers don't make action happen. So to heck with your thoughts and prayers. I'm pretty daggone sick of that. You've heard me talk about that. Every time there's a disaster, we get inundated with, we don't care about your thoughts and prayers. Your prayers didn't stop bullets, you know, like that freaking Neil Tyson DeGrasso, whatever his name is, the scientist that's trying to make science hip and cool, but he's kind of a dork, but he's supposedly brilliant. And it's just an atheist platform. Because other people from other religions, they're not attacking people that say thoughts and prayers. It's usually aligned with those who have an atheist or agnostic worldview on religion. I've had an argument with people online when I pointed that out, especially in the case of this CEO, because they're like, well, you know, he just said that to make a point. I said, no, he didn't even need to bring that up. He didn't need to say anything about thoughts and prayers. He could have easily said, you know what? We're going to do something here at Dick's Sporting Goods. We're going to take it upon ourselves to make a difference and do something. And leave it at that. You didn't have to take a swipe and a snide remark at thoughts and prayers. But again, that now shows me everything I need to know. It shows me this guy is probably an atheist, or he's probably an agnostic, which means he's probably for bigger government, because government is their god. They don't believe in natural rights endowed by our creator. They look at a collective of humans that are just better at doing the job than everybody else, more elite, more intelligent than everybody else, especially in hayseed flyover country. You don't need those guns. We need to give those guns to the government, because the government is going to do a better job at policing everybody. Even though the FBI dropped the ball numerous times on the Parkland shooter, even though the police department failed to act on the 40-some calls that they got, in fact, many of those calls coming from the shooter himself, background checks that were failed in Sutherland Springs and in Vegas with Stephen Paddox, the same incident that was happening across the board is, you know, where government failures come into play. No one cares to mention that stuff. No one cares to say, well, yeah, only the police should have the guns. You don't need the guns. Like Mark Hoppus from Blink-182, that freaking lame punk band. I don't like punk that sounds like a bunch of whiny, nasally, snot-nosed, mall rats playing punk. Going, nah, nah, nah. No, I want Astro Zombies. You know, I want friggin' Misfits. I want GBH. I want Black Flag. I want some, you know, some balls behind the punk music. But he's going to get out there and say, oh, the police, just, you know, let them have the guns. Well, how did that work out with the four officers who basically stood down? The resource officer that decided, I'm not going to shoot. I'm just going to cower in place and watch the death. So all of the arguments for gun control, they just don't seem to make reasoned stance. You just can't take everybody's guns away and expect the people that are breaking the law not to break the law anymore. But at the same time, we have to look at the government failures, which were numerous. So until we tighten up the government side, then we will have no solutions. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. You can check me out on Talk America Radio every Saturday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Sunday morning, 8 a.m. You can check out the podcast when you want on demand. iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Spreaker, TuneIn, iHeart. Or you can get the free Adrian Slade Show Roku channel in your Roku streaming store. We love Roku because they stood up for our Second Amendment rights. And you can also follow me on my blog, adrianslade.com. We'll check you out next time.